Welcome to the Scariest Things Podcast, your gateway to the trends and tropes of the horror genre. This is Mike Campbell, and tonight we are talking horror movie directors, aka the sampler, the horror movie director sampler, aka the return of horror movie directors. And of course, I am with
Eric Lee
and
Liz Williams.
So way back in 2018, a long, long time ago,
in the Neolithic age of Scariest Things.
Yes, when before Liz, BL. BL.
BL and AL, is that what?
Yes, BL and AL, yes. We're now firmly parked in AL, but before BL, we were on episode number 12. Episode number 12,
wow.
Eric and I took a cut. We took a swing at this.
Best directors.
This subject, best directors. We talked about people like Roger Corman. We talked about George Romero. We talked about Ty West. We talked about Dario Argento. We talked about John Carpenter. We obviously talked about the big, the heavy hitters. And and as we were just kind of talking about, once you get past those big heavy hitters, people that have really spent their entire lives working in the horror genre, once you get past that, there's not a lot of directors out there that have, you know, slaved away for years and years on making horror movies.
Right.
There's just a handful of people that have really, really stuck with the genre. I mean, when you get down to brass tacks, there's people that have like dipped their toe in the water, given it a try, maybe done really well, but then they've stayed away from it forever. Mm-hmm. Very few are those that have stuck with it and stuck with it for decades and decades.
And some of this is I think speaks to the sort of the independent nature of being a director.
Yeah.
And you know, back in the ye old days when you were a part of a studio director, then you it's like you're going to do westerns.
Yep.
And
right.
There was like everybody did westerns back in the 40s.
You're going to do sci-fi. You're going to do cheesy driving movies. Yeah.
Your romance or comedy, and that was your thing.
Or God forbid Roger Corman sunk his talons into you. You're doing crappy B movies forever
with funny puppet rubber thingies. Roger Corman was one of our picks. That was one of your picks.
Yes.
Love
yes indeed.
Roger Corman.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, I mean, I think he had at that point in time. I mean, God knows, I can't even remember how many like production credits he had.
Got like 80 production credits.
But I think he had like 50 some odd film credits. No, I think he's got hundreds of production credits. But he had like 50 some odd film credits.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And he sort of stopped directing in the 80s.
His wife does a lot of the directing. Right. Or she picked up the slack.
But it's fun actually to see. He will still show up on set, and he is the godfather of schlock cinema.
Oh yeah,
and,
yeah,
and,
yeah.
And he, you know, that the people who he taught, some people like Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, Martin Scorsese.
Jonathan Demme, you know, a couple of minor directors.
Jack Nicholson. I don't know. Peter Bogdanovich.
Vincent Price. You know, small time guys. But all that wisdom, and he's such a nice man. One of the things that I really regret was that we didn't get a chance. He was at the Portland Horror Film Festival.
That's right. That's right. A couple years ago. Yeah. Yeah.
Missed out.
That was BL. I think that was BL.
Before Liz.
Yes, before Liz. Yeah.
So what we're doing now.
Yes.
This is the sampler platter.
This is the sampler platter.
Instead of
talking about the greatest directors of all time, we're talking about a handful of directors and talking about those directors that have cobbled together at least a couple horror movies.
Yeah. And ones that you might be somewhat familiar with. But trying to, you know, once you get past the film that you recognize right off the top, what else have they done?
Exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, because that's a frequent thing that Mike likes to ask during our podcast is, what else has this director done?
Right.
You know,
and then
that forces one of us to go into IMDb and search while we're doing the podcasting.
Right.
And then you go, oh, yeah, I did that. All right. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, he did Monster from Party Beach. Okay. That's good. I'll go see that.
Yep. So.
Sorry. Had to get back to the Roger Corman.
I think that was William Castle.
I think it was. Yeah. You're right.
But then again, someone out there will know and yes. will get corrected.
Jeff, Monster from Party Beach. Sorry, Monster from Party Beach yeah, fans.
Jeff Dean will probably know and correct right. me at the next horror trivia. So, so anyway, I guess the way let's Mike, what was your criteria on how you decided to pick your director and what's first on. What is your opening course for this director?
I went back and listened to episode 12 from ye olden days in 2018, which 2018 does seem like a long time ago, but I went back and listened to the good majority of that episode. And then I just started to like look through all of the pantheon of horror movie directors. And I came across a director that we have poked fun at, that Rob we have.
Zombie? I know,
is,
Rob Zombie.
It is not Rob Zombie. That we've poked fun at, but we have also given proper accolades to over the years for a number of his films. And some of his films, or at least one of his films, made it into the top 100. And I thought, there's quite a bit of his work that's not horror at all, but we haven't really talked about a lot of his films save for one. And this, of course, is the American film director and screenwriter who has had a career spanning 50 years. This is Brian De Palma. Who might have out-Hitchcocked Hitchcock.
Yeah, for sure.
I think he took in many ways.
I think you said that before. I think you actually think that he's
more Hitchcock than Hitchcock. I think he is. I really do. I think he is, because I think what he did was I think he took a lot of the Hitchcock innovations and he took them into very 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 different worlds. But he was part of that new Hollywood generation of film directors. A couple we just mentioned: Scorsese, Francis Ford Coppola, George Lucas. He was kind of buddies with all those guys. He kind of came around about the exact same time, although he was a New York guy. He apparently he had enrolled in Columbia University as a physics student, and he went and did that. But then he had seen Citizen Kane, and then he saw like Vertigo like back to back, and he was like, wait a second, I do not need to be slaving away studying physics. I need to figure out how to get into this. And so he, after he got his undergraduate degree, he enrolled as a co-ed in Sarah Lawrence College, and he became one of the first male students ever to graduate from Sarah Lawrence College with an MA in theater arts. Which was pretty interesting. And of course, from there he dabbled around in a lot of experimental theater in the 1960s, and that was kind of his shtick. I do encourage folks, if they haven't already, there's a great documentary about him that came out a couple years ago where it's really, they don't interview anybody else but him, and it's him talking about himself, and it's pretty interesting because it's a little myopic in nature, and it's a little claustrophobic because it's really you sort of listening to, Brian De Palma wax poetically about his films for 2.5 hours or 2 hours. But it is interesting. And he explains a lot of, how certain things came about. But I think the real takeaway for me is that I think Brian De Palma is the, or Mike Flanagan rather, is the new Brian De Palma. Like when Brian De Palma hits, he really hits. And when he misses, he really misses. And I think he has missed on way more occasions than he's actually hit. Hot take, I'm here to tell you Scarface is a terrible film. I think Scarface...
I've never seen it.
I think it's one of the worst films ever. And I think it's been mythologized over over the decades as this brilliant, brilliant piece of cinema when it really isn't. I think some of the, I certainly think Al Pacino's role is, pretty extraordinary, and Al Pacino does a great job with it. But I think the film in total is not that good. But we are not here to talk about Al Pacino, even though Scarface does definitely have some horrific elements, including a chainsaw. Yes, a chainsaw. But the three films I wanted to talk about, the three Brian De Palma films I wanted to mention were Raising Kane, Sisters, and Carrie. And you know,
I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never seen Raising Kane or heard of that one, but I've seen the other two.
Eric, you've seen Carrie, yeah?
Yeah.
One of these days we're going to get back to another one of our oldies but goodies, which is the the shaming of the podcasters of what horror movies they haven't seen. It took me a very long time before I actually saw Carrie. It is an excellent movie.
Yeah. Well, I think even in our last episode that we just wrapped up, I hadn't seen any of the films that we discussed. So there you go. So I am plenty guilty and need to be shamed for that. But the three I wanted to talk about, because I think really when you get down to it, beyond Carrie's Sisters and Raising Kane, I think there's really only probably two other films in his canon that qualify as horror. That would be Blowout, Body Double. I guess
to Kill.
Dressed to Kill. Well, okay. There's more. There's more. There's yeah.
What was the one that Liz brought? One also that the Pacino
Cruisin'.
Yeah, Cruisin'.
Yeah, no, that's Friedkin. That's William Friedkin. Friedkin. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was thinking it was De Palma too, though. Yeah, same kind of vibe.
Yeah, so I guess Dressed to Kill, Blowout, Body Double, and Phantom of the Paradise.
Oh God, I love Phantom of the Paradise.
Yeah, that would probably be about it. That would be like really, really horror. I think everything else either is really just kind of thrillers.
Even action. Body Double and Blowout are thrillers.
Yeah, I mean, Blowout is the only reason I put it sort of vaguely in the horror category is because obviously, John Travolta plays the audio engineer who is recording audio of a horror movie. horror movie voiceovers and women screaming. So I was like, okay, well that's horror. But yeah, so I think those are really for me the top of the peak for Brian De Palma, Carrie, Sisters, and Raising Kane. I did review Sisters a year or so ago for the website, so you can read my review of that. It is a pretty incredible film. It's which like many of his films are, he likes to toil in twins. He likes to deal in medical experimentation, not unlike David Cronenberg. And this is an incredible. I think it's his best film. Frankly, I think it's even better than Carrie. Hmm. This, of course, stars Margot Kidder, who is this was one of her first films, and it's a it's an amazing film. And even, it's just an incredible film. So, but the one I'll focus on, I guess, since we've talked plenty about, Carrie is Raising Kane. This is a 1992 film. It's an American psychological horror thriller film starring John Lithgow. John Lithgow doesn't play one character or two characters or three or four. No, John Lithgow plays five different characters.
Takes an actor the caliber of John
in the film.
Off.
Yeah, yeah. And he is great. The film revolves around a respected child psychologist, Dr. Carter Nix, and his wife, who becomes increasingly concerned that he is obsessively studying their daughter, Amy. And he's trying to figure out all the different pressure points for her psychological development and how trauma can actually manifest itself in different personality types.
Oh.
And you quickly, early on in the film, you learn that there may or may not be a twin brother, and there may or may not be a also equally famous Norwegian psychologist father who was studying many of the same.
Is this Max von Sydow?
No, it's John Lithgow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's John Lithgow playing his twin brother. It's John Lithgow playing his father. Okay. Yeah, and so, you know, the film basically involves child abduction and abducting these children to specifically do these trauma-like experiments on them to figure out the points at which their personalities might actually sever from reality, and or manifest themselves in other personalities. Yeah, it's an incredible film. There's some great scares in it. Really, really legitimate scares. There's one scare in the film that still absolutely terrifies me and absolutely shocks me. It is, I will say, parked firmly in a 1992 headspace. It, you know, is so if that's something that bothers you and you can't get around, you may have to stay away from Raising Cain, but it really does. I mean, it looks.
I can't take the 90s.
I can't
just
take
too much.
The 90s. Enough with the corduroy. Yeah, it is a great film. And so, yeah, as far as Brian De Palma goes, you know, again, I know he's a pretty hit and miss kind of character, but I think if you stick with Carrie, you stick with Sisters, you stick with Raising Cain, I think you will have yourself a wonderful outing and a wonderful introduction into the world of Brian De Palma.
And do Phantom of the Paradise, too.
And Phantom of the Paradise. And Blowout, too, because John Travolta is great in that.
I need to catch up on my De Palma.
There you go.
Catch up on your De Palma, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, because, you know, and the other thing I will say about Brian De Palma is, you know, obviously we joke about the fact that he's more Hitchcock than Hitchcock. You know, Brian De Palma comes from, you know, that new era of Hollywood. And I don't know that we will ever see directorial talent like that again. And I don't think you'll ever see an instance where you can be making films of that type for a 50-year period of time.
Yeah, I think one of the curious things here is that the age of the thriller sort of has... You don't see many of them like you used to, because it used to be a staple of sort of mid-budget. They were vehicles for big stars in where the biggest
the
80s, cost, the
so
biggest,
much. Yeah.
Where you put a Michael Douglas or Alec
Sean
Baldwin
Connery
or whoever in these roles, and it was a starring vehicle, and they got to show off their acting chops, and it was. But now those kinds of mid-budget thrillers, they've gone either more fantastical towards horror, or they go more towards action stuff, like so that was. But the 70s, you know, the 70s and 80s were prime time for thrillers.
So
sorry, Liz, you have to hope for a renaissance of your
thriller renaissance.
I'll take it. Yep. I'll just watch the ones from the 80s. I don't care.
A thrillissance.
A thrillissance. I'll wait for the thrillissance.
The thrillissance starts now.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, Brian De Palma is only 81 years old, so he can, you know.
He can have another one in him.
Yeah. He probably bang out like a couple more before he. gives it up.
Yeah, you know, Silence of the Lambs was Demi.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Who did Basic Instinct?
I want
Paul Verhoeven.
No.
I was gonna talk about it.
John Huston.
When we did. Hold on, hang on. I got it. I'm Googling. Directed by Paul Verhoeven.
Oh,
no way.
I got it.
Yeah.
Okay. Ding 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 ding.
It was.
Ding,
you were right.
Ding.
Okay.
There you go.
Wow. That's his most straight up movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably.
That's a good movie. That's a baby giallo.
It is baby giallo. The thrillissance meets baby giallo.
It's got the sexy misogyny. It's got the stabby stabby.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's got all that.
Baby Giallo. I will be stealing that. You will be hearing Baby Giallo.
Give me your band name,
Baby Giallo. If you listen to this podcast, you'll be hearing Baby Giallo again. All right, Eric, what do you got for your director?
My director, okay.
Director sampler platter.
So if I were to ask you guys
yes.
to provide me a director who knows how to develop sympathetic characters, provide drumroll tight editing, and blow you away with a big gory moment, who do you think I was referencing?
John Carpenter.
No.
Oh, Liz, your guess.
Editing is not necessary.
Sam Raimi?
No.
Rob Zombie? Let it be Rob Zombie?
No, this is a French director, Alexandre Aja.
Oh.
Okay.
All right.
He is largely a horror movie director.
Yep.
He's got about 8 or 9 films under his belt.
Yep.
And one of the reasons why I picked him is I think that he's getting better with as he progresses. Although his first film is a landmark French extremism film.
Yeah.
For a Frenchman, he really understands how to do a great American horror movie.
Right.
He also knows how to set up the oh my god moments in his movies, and there's always one shot in each of his movies that'll just blow your socks off. And he's still pretty young. I think he's only 43 now, and he hasn't yet hit the big time.
Right.
He's accomplished, but his stuff he hasn't been given the reins like we were talking about in our previous one, mm-hmm. Moon Knight.
Yeah.
Benson and Moorhead.
Yeah. Right.
That all of a sudden they graduated up, and all of a sudden some like the big studios go, that guy's got talent. I think Aja's got a lot of talent, and I think that at some point that hopefully he'll catch a big break and he'll get his moment. But the thing is that he also likes to go really gory, and that will sort of that may limit him in
Do you think he's? Do you think he hasn't got the big break and he's being held back because of Piranha 3D?
Or Mirrors? I mean, really think he's gotten better?
Hot take.
Sorry. Okay.
Hot take.
All right.
Hot take.
Yeah, well, this is coming from Liz, who loves herself some French extremism, so it's probably downhill from the first movie that I'd like to
talk about. I think Crawl was amazing, but he had some crappers in the middle there.
Yeah. We'll rattle off some of the other the features that he's got. So, Piranha 3D, total guilty pleasure.
Awesome film.
The Hills Have Eyes, a pretty solid.
See, I guess I'm taking that on him that I just don't like that movie.
Because I don't
like hillbilly horror.
Yep.
That's on you.
So it's not his fault. I take it back, Alex. Yep. Come on, and I'll apologize to you.
Horns, which was, that's Daniel Radcliffe's first non-Harry Potter movie.
So
that was kind of a big deal at the time. But he also shows an ability to switch, because each one of those kinds of movies is a little different from each other. The first one that I want to talk about is High Tension, which is a slasher. And this is, I think, one of the things that I really appreciate about what he does is that his protagonists, by and large, make smart decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Certainly, Cécile de France, who plays Marie, was a showcase for her. I mean, she's gone on. She's pretty much sticks to French film, and so
did
she hasn't shown.
Did High Tension make it onto our top 100 list?
I think it did.
Okay, good.
Yeah, for sure. Whew.
But this is a near perfect slasher for 80% of the movie.
Yep.
It is brutal. It is about as scary and intense as you can make a slasher, and I think it's because the cat and mouse between the heroine and the villain,
mm-hmm.
that their move and counter move, they're both making smart moves, and I guess the reveal at the end sort of may describe why, I think for a lot of critics it fell apart because of the twist. I'm not going to spoil it for those of you who haven't seen it, because I don't know that it is particularly well. Like diehard horror fans will have seen High Tension. But for those of you who are gateway friends who are learning about horror movies, this is a really even with kind of a goofy twist at the end, this is so much better than your stock American horror.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I mean, it gives you the kind of the violent impact of the movie that was hot last year that we debated about, which Halloween Kills.
Yep.
And it's savagery, but unlike an American movie, it doesn't set up a whole bunch of. It's not a high body count movie. I mean, there's 6 or 7 people who get killed in this movie.
They're all killed in the first 15 minutes.
Yeah, it serves up some of the great tropes and showing that he can really do it. There's some LGBT overtones not a, the healthiest depiction of the LGBT community necessarily. It's a great home invasion sequence. There's gas station horror, which is one of my favorite things. If you want to check out more about gas station horror, check out my dead list on the website.
It also made it into the abduction. Best horror opening sequence of all time. Yep. So
I think
it hits on many levels.
It hits on many, many levels. I think a really good comp was another movie that we had just talked a lot about, which is I Saw the Devil.
Yeah.
I think relative to its intensity and the killer versus the protagonist and all that, how that plays out.
Yep.
The twist aside, I think they're pretty comparable. Mm-hmm. The best kill in this movie involves all things, a chest of drawers and a staircase. it's enough said. You'll have to watch it.
Right.
You can actually see it. If you just want to see that sequence, you can go on YouTube and it's on there. It's crazy, nasty, and absolutely horrifying to witness. The first time I saw it, I couldn't believe what I saw. But again, I think one of the things that Aja has got, he has issues closing his movies.
Yeah. I don't think High Tension did make our top 100, by the way.
It didn't?
By the way.
It wasn't on my list.
Did not make
it. But I love it. It's been a long time since I've seen it, though.
So this is a template of how to correctly pace, edit, and perform in a serial killer film.
Yep.
And all the gory mayhem to boot.
Yeah.
The other one and this is one that actually Liz sort of referenced. It's sort of his mid period, which is, I think, sort of emblematic of other things that he's done, is Mirrors.
Yeah.
It's Kiefer Sutherland. So he's taking a step up in sort of, he's doing an American film, or he's actually filming in Romania, but he's got Kiefer Sutherland and Paula Patton showing up to do, it's sort of a cop drama, and there's Kiefer Sutherland plays Ben, a New York cop who's having to rehabilitate his career after accidentally killing someone in the line of duty. So he's slumming it, trying to work his way back. He becomes a fall down drunk and needs to work his way back into society and back into the good graces of his colleagues and his family. So he's working as the night watchman in a burned out hotel that is haunted.
Right.
And it features a classic trope, which is the mirror trope, for which there are some real stinkers out there, but it is one of the great horror tropes. And this one decides to go full tilt, everything mirror, everything from your car mirrors to pools of water to, you know, and his family happens to live in a house that has way too many mirrors. I think this is another movie that the 2/3 of the movie has got great pacing and plotting, and then it unravels in the third act.
Yep.
There is if you haven't seen it again, if you just want to see the big gory moment, there's the bathtub sequence, which is just like, oh my God, I can't believe what I just saw. There is a hyper gory moment in the middle of the film. And that will stick with you.
There's
in the same way. I mean, that it kind of goes up there with almost the what's the Kurt Russell Western where the guy gets torn in half?
Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, it has that kind of like, oh God, I don't feel good watching that.
Right.
Kiefer does a pretty good job through the movie, but when they sort of justify why, you know, the concept kind of lost its pace, or lost its justification, but it's still worth a watch. I think it's interesting in context of what he does.
Sure.
And then the last one is
Piranha 3D.
Is Crawl.
Oh.
Crawl. Yeah.
You know, this is and this really shows why his maturation as a director. I think he's showing his editing chops. He knows how to film in tight spaces. He knows how to pace it in what is essentially a two person drama with. Skate Scodelario and Barry Pepper playing a father daughter, trapped in like the worst scenario ever. You're in Florida.
This was definitely in my top 10 list of 2019. Yeah, was it on your top 10 list?
It was.
Yeah. Okay.
It's a great movie.
It is.
You know, it's a hurricane causes a flood, which cuts loose a pen of an alligator ranch nearby. And they take up residence in the basement where Barry Pepper is trapped because he's hurt himself, and his daughter Haley comes to his rescue, and it is
thankfully she is on the swim team
at
University of Florida
at Florida State.
And it is a actually no, it's Florida. It's University of Florida because you know what, the Florida Gators.
Gators.
Oh right, that's right. Duh. Yeah, yeah. She's not a Seminole. Yeah.
So you know, it's a survival movie. It's a creature feature. The alligators look great. They're immense, and then they can hide. They get under the water. But the fun thing that he also recognizes is where they have the advantage is that the alligators have a hard time turning around. They're in a confined space, and so it's like taking your moment. And then there's a bunch of red shirts out there. There's some looters and some rescue teams,
which are just awesome scenes. Awesome scenes.
Is
that on your gas station list? There's a gas station scene in Crawl.
Oh, that's totally right.
Yeah. That's right. It's just underwater.
Yeah, it's been
a flooded gas
out.
Station.
And you know, the looters who go to the gas station to get a couple of Twinkies. That was the worst plan that they ever had, because you got some. The alligators aren't interested in the Twinkies.
So what's scene. Alexander Aja got coming up?
He actually because
Brian De Palma ain't got nothing.
Yeah, Aja just did a science fiction movie. French language.
Uh-huh.
Called Oxygen. And
oh,
it was
okay.
Released last year.
Did you see it?
Cool. I haven't seen it. I found out about it doing some background research here. But
is it horror?
No.
Okay.
No, it's a science fiction film.
Science fiction, okay.
And it's gotten, you know, it's got a Metacritic around 70.
That's
so
good.
So it sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good.
You know, I think that, you know, the Metacritic for Mirrors is around 40. Metacritic for Crawl is also around 70. So I think what the studios trust him now.
Yeah.
To do, I think this was a bigger budget, so maybe it'll launch him into doing some other, that his next American film will offer up similar things. I think one of the other fun things is this has got one of the best, you know, does the dog make it kind of a thing.
Right.
It's like Sugar's a schnauzer and she's a good dog, but it's like, she's in a bad spot. It's not, you know what?
right.
Caught
right.
in a flood, wandering through a house, you know, knee deep in water with alligators. And
yeah,
come on, doggy, you gotta get out of there. I had a lot of fun with it, and I think he's got all of the skills to become a great one. I mean, you take a look at even like Wes Craven had some early missteps, and
yeah,
you know, Toby
oh, yeah.
Hooper. Mm-hmm. They built a reputation on a couple of key films.
Yep.
And in Aja's case, it's High Tension and Crawl, and hopefully that's enough
and
of
Piranha,
a platform.
Piranha 3D.
Piranha 3D. Yeah,
not to be confused with Piranha 3
Double D,
which is not that good.
No, but
truth
you know,
be told,
but the, you know, Piranha 3D has got the great, you know, some great moments like, oh gosh, who's the
Eli Roth. When Eli Roth gets it, that's it. Awesome.
Well, the guy
Bing Rames.
Guy gets his dick chewed off.
Oh yeah, Jerry O'Connell.
Jerry O'Connell.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, totally. So it shows that he's willing to do like comedy horror.
Yep.
In the same way that actually I think we were talking about with Liz in the last one that Ben Wheatley can do. Comedy.
He can do comedy.
Yeah. Alexander Aja. So, anyways, keep an eye out for this director. Again, his most recent one. I don't know if he's got anything currently in production because he just finished up. He's probably taking a break.
IMDb says he's got 7 projects in the works right now. So
wow.
But who knows which of them are horror films?
He's holding scripts. He's picking and choosing.
Yeah, potentially. All
do
right.
You know what else he did? Did you do when we were at the Overlook? They had that virtual reality thing called Campfire.
Oh yeah, I did that. I did that
he
one.
Did
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I did that. Yeah,
yeah,
that was fun.
Yeah, that was a cool little thing.
That yep, I definitely so. Jumped out of my Oculus.
Yeah, it's like, what was that? Oh my God, it's right behind me. Yeah, so the. I'm trying to figure out what is next. Oop, was on the IMDb looking.
All right, so Liz, what is your horror director sampler platter? Who is on your horror director sampler platter?
No surprise, because I picked Pascal Laugier.
Oh.
So
French.
My fave, French, staying in the new French extreme movement with Alexander Aja. He only has 4 films, so my platter of 3, you can just add a, you know, get dessert and add the 4th. So there is not a lot of info about him. He's 50. He's a Libra. He worked on... He was an assistant director to Christopher Gans on that film Brotherhood of the Wolf.
Then he
started making his own film. So I'm going to talk about his first film first, which is 2004. Well, first, before I get into this, I'll say, here's what I really like about him. So every single one of his movies, since there's only 4, we'll see what happens when he finally does number 5, has female leads.
Mm-hmm.
They're all going on like a journey. It's going to be a dirty journey to the other side. You're going to get beaten up. It's not going to be a pleasant journey, but it is a journey. Also, his films don't just have a twist. They have a full stop and we turn around in the other direction and go back the other way. They are like 2 movies in one, every single one of his films.
Yep.
To varying degrees of success. But I'm not going to say he keeps getting better because Martyrs was his second one and that film is perfect to me. But, so his first,
number one.
Yeah. Still my number one. His first film is called Saint Ange. It was also known as House of Voices. Cause when they filmed it in French and they filmed it in English. So it got, released under 2, titles. It stars Virginie Leoden and Lou Doylen, and it takes place at a boarding or an isolated orphanage in the French Alps back in the 50s. And there's supernatural stuff, and there used to be kids there, but they all get taken away to other orphanages because one little boy died in this creepy bathroom, and it seems supernatural, but you don't know what's really going on there, and you start in this creepy old boarding school in the 50s and then you go in the basement and it is a completely different scene that does not go together with the outside of the building. So I'm not going to spoil this for anybody, but, complete twist. It's all women in the, film, except for some of the little kids are boys. It's really, really good. And the problem is this one is hard to get. So unless you have a video store for a DVD, you're going to have to do this, watch for free online and take your chances with streaming it that way.
What would you say that would make this film emblematic for what Logier does?
Female lead, hero's journey, and a hard stop and twist in the other direction.
Gotcha.
All his films have every single one of them. That's going to be the same thing. So his second one that I'll talk about is Martyrs from 2008. I've talked about this before. It's my favorite film. It is, to me, probably, it's a perfect movie. It is a 5-star movie. I love it. Eric hasn't seen it, so he can't say anything. Mike has.
I saw it, yeah.
Mike saw it.
I watched it for the horror movie pilot challenge. Yeah.
So
I liked it. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
It's such a fascinating story too, because it's like when to your point about the sort of hard stop and big twist, the first part of the film has nothing to do with the second part of the film.
Exactly.
I mean, they're connected, but they're so very different in tone and tenor and everything. But then you go, all makes complete sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And he writes these too. So
he's
going all out and doing all these. the third one I'll talk about is, I just clicked back to my own thing, is 2018's Incident in a Ghostland. But it's also now just being put out as Ghostland, because Incident in a Ghostland's not, doesn't really roll off the tongue. This one, same exact thing. It is super violent, super visceral, female lead, hard twist right in the middle. And this one plays a little bit more with kind of psychological horror than St. Ange does. Martyrs, obviously, the entire thing is psychological. I don't want to even like talk about any of the plots of these movies because one, they're complicated.
Sure.
And two, you can't really get into them without giving away some of the twists. But this has to do with a lady who it's two sisters who return home to their secluded house after they have inherited the home from her mother. And there was like a home invasion there years ago. And one of them is successful and a writer and has moved on. And the other one has not moved on and is a hot mess, hot, hot mess. And there's some really creepy criminals and it's a nasty film. So nasty, in fact, that when they were filming it, one of the actresses got injured going through a plate glass window. And then, yeah, they sued and she was awarded $40,000. And they were fined and everything. So. Yeah. So. Yeah.
Now, what about, Liz, what about the tall man? You skipped. Okay. I noticed that was an omission. I didn't know if that was dessert or
as part of dessert.
The same. Okay.
So have you? Because that is the least horror of the horror movies.
Oh, interesting. Because it like, you know, it looks, tastes, and feels like a horror movie, but you're saying it is not.
No, it is. Because I talked about it in, I think I talked about it in Abduction Horror.
Oh, right.
Yeah,
that's
but
right.
This doesn't have the blood and gore like the other ones do.
Okay.
It has your strong female lead, played by Jessica Biel in this case.
Yeah.
It has you think it's going one way, and that one has a huge twist.
Okay.
And then, but the journey, it follows all the same pacing, but it just doesn't have the blood and guts and extremism that the other ones do, but also it's written and directed by him. So that one's kind of, it says more of a mystery horror film. And I'd say that's fair.
Okay.
It's really good though, but I could see how some people would be very turned off by it.
Okay.
Cause they'd be like, this isn't good. I think it's great. I love all of his movies.
On a related note though, I was definitely turned off by Slender Man, which was, you know, in the same universe as The Tall Man, but yes.
No, this is
Slender Man, 2018 Slender Man was El Estinco.
Yeah, not a great title for what it actually ends up being.
Okay.
Kind of reminded me when Antlers came out. Antlers reminded me of The Tall Man a little bit, just where they filmed it. It looked like the same kind of set. It was in an old mining town. It's impoverished and children are disappearing. So kind of had that same feel.
All right.
But this is, for a second there, I thought The Tall Man's like, is that the one with Jeff Goldblum? No, what was that? That was the man with the red shoe or something like that.
That was Tom Hanks, wasn't it?
Oh, gosh. Hold on. Because it also is like, The Tall Man, why does it sound familiar and yet not familiar?
So right now, Logier does not have anything that I can find in process. He was supposed to be doing that Hellraiser remake that David Bruckner is now going to do. But the reason it says he was taken off of it was that there was too many creative differences with the producers, not with Clive Barker, because he wanted to go really dark and lean into the S&M and, you know, sexuality of Hellraiser. And they wanted something a little bit more commercial and less extreme.
Yeah, Barker wanted to do that for the first Hellraiser. Yeah. I mean, that's what he writes about. He really dives into the psychosexuality and that's what made him sort of a famous writer, and they wouldn't let him go as nasty as he wanted to go.
So Liz, have you been this is a personal question, have you been taking French lessons because you want to have Logier on the podcast and
talk to him in French? It would just be like, can you open the window please, where is the bathroom?
I like Tall Man.
Yeah, I like
I like Ghost. Yeah.
The movie that I was thinking of was the 1989 movie, The Tall Guy, starring Jeff Goldblum.
Oh, okay. No. He is a tall guy.
All right, well, let's recap real quickly for the horror movie director sampler platter. I started off with Brian De Palma and the three films of his you should watch. I mean, there's probably more than three, but the three you should definitely watch
that are horror movies
firmly parked in the world of horror are Carrie, Sisters, and Raising Cain. Eric.
I am picking for my sampler platter.
Yes.
A Alexandra Aja smorgasbord platter. This is starting with High Tension from 2003, is a classic slasher movie, super intense. Don't mind the ending. The 2008 Supernatural movie starring Kiefer Sutherland, Mirrors. And then 2019's creature feature survival horror Alligators in the Basement, Crawl.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, this. And I had Pascal Legier, and I picked 2004 Saint Ange, 2008's Martyrs, and 2018's Ghostland, or Incident in the Ghostland, and I also put The Tall Man in there from 2012 for dessert. A little less horror. A little less horror. His thing is like, okay, he's like, I'm going to use like one thing and make four different recipes. So it's going to be like, I don't know, it's chocolate, but here it's going to be like a mousse, and here it's going to be on bacon. So you're getting the same thing, but it's all just a little bit different.
So he's a bit of an auteur, though. He's going to be.
Yes.
He's going to make you wait for the next course. For
right. Oh, yeah, for sure.
He's very, very selective, it seems like.
Yeah.
It's not for the lack of opportunities. It's just he's like a Kubricky kind of a guy who makes
seems like it. It's 4 to 6 years in between every movie. And then when I was looking for this, I just found that did a French miniseries in 2020, which now I'm going to have to find because it's about people on an island and each of them has committed a murder.
Ooh.
So I got to find that.
All right. Yeah. Who's got a tagline to take us out of here? I have one. It's from The Tall Man. Fear takes a new shape. Get it?
Oh.
Okay, we'll take it.
Not great, but yeah. Movie's better than
we'll
the
take
tagline.
What we can get. There, it was screwed up in the translation.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds good in French.